Today on All Together Now, we speak with CARA resident and activist Neil Schoenfeld, live in the ACRA studio, about the major die-off of pollinators occurring locally and internationally. Alana Medlock also talks to Lauren Letelier and Chris Atkins from the Rojan Library in Hillsdale and Copaic. And we hear reports from Oneida County, Rensselaer County, Albany, Catskill, Ulster County, Hudson, and points beyond. Today on All Together Now.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
We take you now to
this radio broadcast.
You are tuned in to All Together Now, a collaborative one-hour news show for community radio stations in the Capital Region and New York's Hudson Valley. All Together Now features contributions from the public, along with programmers at WOOC in Troy and WGXC in Acre, featuring local and regional news, weather updates, and newsmaker interviews.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is The Weekend in Review. Some of the stories that made the news between Friday, May 27th through Monday, May 30th. I'm Philip Grant. Greg Hudson reported in the Daily Mail that despite having their church closed by the Roman Catholic Diocese of Albany last week, some parishioners of St. Patrick's Church in Catskill are actively looking for a way to rescue the historic 1885 building. Diocese said it made the decision to close the parish because the structure had fallen into disrepair and it could not be repaired. Parishioner Deb Johnson said that was not the outcome expected when the church was closed in 2008, seemingly for roof and ceiling repairs. Johnson said parishioners were told that ultimately the church would be reopened. Anthony Patriani said church members raised more than $250,000 in pledges for a capital fund. He said, and I quote, "To this day, we don't know if or how it was spent because repairs were never made to the building," end quote. Petriani alleges the structure was neglected due to managerial error by those in charge of the church. The Friends of St. Pat's group is now organizing a petition appealing to the diocese to allow for the reopening of the church. Petriani said in addition to completing the needed repairs, a parish debt in excess of $1.5 million will also have to be resolved before the doors can open again. "It may be difficult to make this happen," he said, "because since 2008, more than 600 families have left the parish and they are scattered among other parishes within the diocese and elsewhere." Petriani said he hoped Albany Diocese Bishop Edward Straffenberger would make himself available to the Catskill Parish as they seek a resolution. He said, and I quote, "He should come here, show his face, and listen to the people," end quote. Josefa Velasquez reported at Politico New York that amid a push to curb the use of opioids and heroin statewide, a coalition is pushing the state legislature to widen access to prescription medications with abuse deterrent properties. Encouraged by the creation of the governor's new heroin task force, groups ranging from substance abuse organizations, the NAACP, and the Sheriff's Association are urging support for a bill to do just that. In a memo in support of the legislation, the New York State Sheriff's Association said drugs with abuse deterrent properties can serve as a powerful weapon in fighting prescription opioid abuse. "Medications with abuse deterrent properties are harder to crush or liquefy, making it difficult for people to snort or inject them. Both the Senate and the Assembly passed similar bills last year, but the measure was vetoed by Governor Andrew Cuomo. In his veto message, Cuomo said that while the intent of the legislation was laudable, research on the impacts of such drugs has only just started, and it was too early to tell whether the law would achieve its intended effect. Roger Hannigan-Gilson reported in the Register Star that local politicians and residents are expressing varying degrees of support for ride-sharing services operating upstate while the state legislature works on a bill to allow them north of New York City. These types of ride-sharing services use phone apps to connect independent drivers with people in need of rides. The independent drivers are not currently permitted to operate upstate. A bill co-sponsored by Assemblymember Pete Lopez and State Senator George Amador would establish insurance requirements and regulate companies such as Uber and allow them to operate north of New York City. Amador said having ride-sharing in the area would benefit people in rural areas with limited transportation options. He said, and I quote, "These types of ride-sharing services will complement each other. Many of the areas where they will be able to operate don't have cab service options, or if it is available, it is very expensive." The legality of Uber and other ride-sharing services has been challenged by governments and taxi companies who allege that the use of drivers who are not licensed to drive taxi cabs is unsafe and illegal. Brian Hubert reported in the Daily Freeman that Tuesday, May the 31st, marks the last day of the Catskill Mountain Railroad's 25-year lease with Ulster County. The county recently put out a request for proposal for a new operator for two portions of the 38-mile corridor, one near Kingston and the other in the town of Shandaken. Dave Hillard, the railroad's vice president, said only that it bid on both eastern and western portions of the corridor. Hillard said an interruption in the railroad's popular theme excursions, like the Polar Express, is inevitable. There was a sense of disappointment that the rides would disappear among railroad passengers this weekend. Melissa Bowen of Pine Plains came with her daughters. They wanted to ride the train before the railroad closed. Bowen said she was not pleased with plans to convert part of the corridor into a rail trail. She said, and I quote, "We don't need another rail trail," end quote. Jeanette Wolfberg reported in the Columbia paper, at latest count, the Columbia County Department of Social Services houses 46 homeless people in hotels. The report was provided by DSS Commissioner Carrie Jablanka to the Board of Supervisors Human Services Committee earlier this month. According to Jablanka, the 46 include 8 families of 2 or more people. The remainder are single individuals. Not included in the full count are several people with no permanent address staying with friends or relatives. That undisclosed number includes some children who were identified by their respective school districts. And for our final story, Rick Carlin reported at Capital Confidential that in his latest ad, 19th Congressional GOP primary candidate Andrew Heaney appears to be tying himself to presumed GOP presidential candidate Donald Trump. In the message, Heaney says, and I quote, "Donald Trump and I represent everything that John Faso and his cronies hate. We don't take special interest money and we can't be bought," end quote. Heaney then alludes to his opponent's work as a lobbyist and his tenure in the assembly, referencing Faso's missed votes. Faso responded, noting that during his 16 years in the assembly, he was recorded voting 97% of the time and cast almost 24,000 votes on the floor and in committee. WGXE's 2016 Spring Pledge Drive kicks off on June the 2nd, 2016. Help WGXE 90.7 FM raise $20,000 towards operating expenses to keep hands-on creative community radio alive and well in Greene and Columbia counties. Tune in for a full slate of remote broadcast and turn out for special events. Make a tax-deductible contribution online at wgxc.org/donate or call 518-697-7400. Your tax-deductible contribution will help sustain WGXE as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement. Thank you for supporting creative community radio in New York's Greene and Columbia counties. And that wraps up the WGXE Hands-On Radio Daily News Report for today, Tuesday, the 31st and last day of May 2016. From the WGXE Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow.
National Weather Service predicts a low around 52 overnight. Wednesday should be mostly sunny with a high near 77. Partly cloudy Wednesday night with a low around 56. Thursday, mostly sunny again with another high of 77. Thursday night, there is a 50% chance of rain with a low around 58. Friday, scattered showers are possible with a high near 72. You listen to WGXC 90.7 FM.
With Workers Independent News In Depth, I'm Joanne Powers. Last week, workers at Babeland in New York City announced that they had voted to join the Retail, Wholesale, and Department Store Union, becoming the only currently organized adult sex toy store in the country. Catherine Wolf, a Brooklyn Babeland worker who prefers the pronouns they and them, says the workers chose to organize around a number of major work issues, including job security, consistent scheduling, better communication with management, and a safe path to air worker grievances.
That's especially true for my coworkers who identify as trans or gender nonconforming, received a lot of really challenging issues around communication and proper language. We get harassment, people who aren't trans-friendly, who aren't queer-friendly. We want stronger policies in place to be able to protect workers.
The organizing drive began in December, and workers voted overwhelmingly, 21-4, to join the union. Wolf attributes this to the strength and unity of the workers across Babeland's three stores and support from the RWDSU, which currently represents 60,000 other workers across the nation.
They've been phenomenal. They've been so supportive and really great. We're all stoked to be working with them. We had really tried for a very long time, from before I started working there, to air some of the things that were serious grievances in the workplace and try to talk to folks and change things, and just nothing moved. Therefore, we decided to unionize. They were really caught off guard. And I think that speaks to the strength of our campaign and how determined we are to really move into the contract negotiations and get a really strong contract.
Wolf says the diverse workforce at their place of work makes the victory particularly significant.
Because of the nature of our work, there are a lot of people from various marginalized communities who are drawn to work there, transgender and queer-identified people, people who do sex work, people who are from low-income communities, women, people of color. Kind of the base of workers at Babeland are super diverse and come from really interesting intersections. And I think that one of the really cool things about organizing Babeland is that we're bringing a different kind of political analysis to the labor movement around trans inclusion and what feminism looks like in the year 2016. That feels really exciting and really significant.
Wolf also hopes their labor activism can feed into other related struggles.
The decriminalization of sex work, I think it could lift up other voices in terms of like what's happening with trans rights across the country. So I think because it is at the intersection of all these different things, it's a really exciting place to be doing labor organizing.
Brought to you by the IBEW, 750,000 men and women powering the way for an American comeback. Information on how to become an International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Power Professional is online at ibew.org.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
We are all together now, all together.
All right, I'm Tom Rowe here in the WGXC Acre studio with Neil Schoenfeld from Caro, who's come to talk about local pollination and local land preservation and bees and more. Neil Schoenfeld from Caro is here. Thank you for stopping by.
So I am one of the co-directors of the Northeast Regional Land Trust, which is based in Cairo. My partner is Mike Esley. And I do all the outside work, and Mike, being a lawyer, does all the inside work. The Northeast Regional Land Trust is a nonprofit entity focusing on preserving open spaces throughout the Northeast region. Our goal is to protect and preserve the pristine natural beauty of our environment through the skilled management of significant tracts of land. One of our major projects is the Wildflower Project, and it's the trust is working diligently to educate property owners as to the many benefits associated with the planting of wildflowers, native trees, plants, and shrubs. Our program is structured to so as to encourage owners to preserve the natural balance of the ecosystem through the planting of these different species. Wildflowers serve as a host plant for many native butterflies and bees by providing a food source along with a breeding habitat. The continued urban sprawl, coupled with our development and use of chemical agents, has dramatically decreased the number of wildflowers, thereby reducing the butterfly and bee population. So in 2002, I got involved with all this, and I watched this report with Harry Reasoner on 2020, and he presented a report on the effects of spraying Roundup weed killer. The weed killer used in the aerial spraying of coca plants in Colombia, South America, was devastating to the health of the people, the farm animals, etc. It was also destroying drinking water in the regions being sprayed. So I started a program to get people to stop using these chemicals, and I've been working on it ever since. So research is finding more evidence that human exposure to these chemicals is causing an increase in cancer and birth defect rates. I have a great concern that your children and pets are inhaling and having a great contact with this toxic environment. For example, Quebec was the first province to implement a cosmetic pesticide ban in 2006. Since then, Ontario, Nova Scotia, New Brunswick, Newfoundland, and Prince Edward Island have adopted laws to restrict cosmetic pesticides. Recently, this is a report from the Washington Post, March 24th, Maryland's honeybees are being massacred and the weapon might be in your house. In the end, Maryland lawmakers couldn't ignore the haunting story from beekeepers. I go into the winter with a really strong population, managing them to be fat and healthy, treated for mites with plenty of food, said Bonnie Raytrip, a keeper in Baltimore County. By the end of the winter, you open your hives and they're all dead. The keepers join academics and conservationists convincing the General Assembly that mass deaths over the past 4 years are likely tied to widespread use of household pesticides linked to honeybee mortality. So Maryland actually passed a bill banning all home pesticide and recreational pesticide use. And the big cause of this is neon technicoids or neonics, which was introduced in agriculture in the 1990s and made available to the general public more recently because they thought it would be safer for the bees than pesticides. The problem is that this pesticide gives off a poison pollen. The bees take it back to the hive and eventually the whole hive collapses. So this is from Reuters, 4/9/2015, home improvement chain Lowe's will stop selling a type of pesticide suspected of causing a decline in the honeybee population to pollinate key American crops. This is neonics and neon technicoid. Scientists, consumer groups, beekeepers, and others say the deaths are linked to the neonic pesticides. The bee die-off is worrisome for agriculture because honeybees pollinate plants and produce a fourth of the food consumed by Americans. Well, France just had such a die-off that they have banned all the use of these neonics in their country. And that was also recently published, and they had a big fight. And the farmers did not want to stop using it because they got a better yield. But there was a major die-off in France, so the legislature in France banned it.
So France and Maryland have banned it. What about New York?
No, and this is something I hope I'm working on, and we could start, you know, possibly banning it in New York in the future. And there's five other states that are also looking into banning it.
So if it's not banned, then what products are they that people shouldn't buy that have it in it? You know,
well, all the plants, trees, and shrubs that are sold in all the big box stores are grown with this stuff. A lot of and I just spoke to a manager when I was down in Florida, and he said in Home Depot, 100% of the plant shrubs and trees that they sell are grown with it.
So you have to go to an organic independent garden center.
Right. Yes, definitely. And check with them and make sure that their stuff is not grown with these chemicals. They are labeling it, you know, some of their trees and things like that. But that's as far as they're going. And they're not going to take, like Lowe's is not going to take any of the stuff off their shelves until 2019, till alternatives become available or till they possibly run out of their inventory. And that's Walmart, Lowe's, Home Depot, and I think Costco too.
And so what should people do? I guess call Albany and try to get local legislators on board with a ban. And right. What else are you suggesting?
Well, that's what I'm suggesting. Talk to all your legislatures. There's tons of stuff on the internet about this. There's bills, I think, all the way up to President Obama. And the more people that speak out, and also try to eat organic food. I mean, as I go into the supermarkets locally, I'm finding the organic sections are bigger and bigger because people are really worried about this. And as I talk to people, people are getting very concerned about, you know, this whole health issue.
Why do you think bees are so important?
Well, all our pollinators are extremely important. The bees, the butterflies, the hummingbirds, even other birds, you know, disperse pollen. And
are they all dying off as much as the bees? Have you?
We
were both saying don't see as many monarch butterflies around.
I live in Pearling, outside of Cairo, New York. I used to get waves during the migration in September coming through my property. Now I get two or three the whole migration.
The monarchs, yeah.
The monarchs. But they are being affected by the GMOs because all those plants, you know, that are being grown, all that food is being sprayed. And there have been big articles. There's three migrations through the country, and they're all being sprayed with Roundup and other chemicals. So the eastern population migration, the Midwest, and this was in the New York Times, and the western population down the western part of the country have all gone through a major decline. I mean, I could see it just in my own yard. So
it's just as simple as, like, if you're putting out rat poison for rats to eat and die, you're putting out poison for weeds on plants that animals eat or pollinate with, they're going to be affected by the poison too.
Right. Well, if you spray, most people do not read the instructions on this stuff. So most people spray this stuff. They ingest it. Actually explained to you on the labeling not to spray in the wind, but people still do. They won't wear any kind of masks, and all these chemicals, you know, it's been proven have terrible, you know, effects. There was just a report now recently that linking pesticides to Lou Gehrig's disease, and there was another report about a month ago with Gwen Ifill on PBS, that 3/5 of our pollinators in the world are heading to extinction. So we need to do everything we can to preserve, you know, our pollinators and our, you know, bird life and wildlife if we want to have them in the future and if we want to have plants and vegetables for our, you know, future generations, because we could wipe them out.
If you just tuned in, we're talking to Cairo resident and activist Neil Schoenfeld about pollinators locally and internationally and more. Do you also have a local land trust, too,
yes,
that you're helping? You're trying to give the bees and butterflies a place to hang out?
Well, that's all kept, you know, and my yard is all kept organic, and we use no chemicals either on my yard, which I grow a lot of native plants to give away, and our 95-acre land trust, it's all, there's no chemicals used at all. The other issue I want to talk about is medications. They're just starting a program now where you could bring certain medications to your druggist at certain times of the year. We need a full-time program, which other states have adopted, where you can just bring your medications like to a sheriff's department or a local police officer, and then somebody will pick them up and destroy them. Do not flush them. They get into our marine environment, either the Hudson River or our streams, and the sewage treatment plants cannot break them down. And they're having devastating effects on all our marine life. In the oceans, they've done studies, and the wild dolphin population is suffering terribly, and other marine species from all the medication that's being dispersed into the ocean. One other thing, there's a new bird collar out called Birds Be Safe. It has different colors on it. A cat collar. So when the birds see the cat in the street or in the woods or things like that, they'll fly away. It distracts them. They estimate, in a report I read recently, 1.4 to 3.7 billion birds are lost to outdoor and feral cats worldwide. So these collars can be bought on the internet. I've been telling all the vets and different pet supply places about them, and a lot of people are looking into them, and it's a very good situation. So,
and they prove they work? They fly away?
The Wild Bird Center that I volunteer in Florida during the winter, the people that are members there, part of the staff, they put them on every one of their cats, and they've been proven to work.
All right, we just have 1 minute left with Neil Schoenfeld. Do you want to have you have one last thing to say that you brought that we didn't get to? Excuse me, we're live in.
Well, there are other things that could be used to kill weeds. I mean, if you can, I pull my weeds, or I take a spade or a different garden thing, and I kill them. I chop them with the weed, you know. So that's one way. Weed whacking. Now, you could also use white vinegar. Works well. You could use some kind of heavy-duty salt mixture. That's people in Florida use salt water, and they kill their weeds with salt water. There are other organic
All right,
sprays.
We're going to have to go on that note. Thank you, Neil Schoenfeld, for joining us live here in Cairo to talk about the birds and the bees locally.
He come grooving up slowly. He got juju eyeball. He one holy roller. He got hair down to his knee. Got to be a joker. He just do what he please. Shoot me. Shoot me. Shoot. He wear no shoe shine. He got toe jam football. He got monkey finger. He shoot Coca-Cola. He say, I know you.
This is the WGXC News Update. I'm Laura Zelaznik. The Daily Freeman reports that on May 29th, a New York prison guard was burned when he opened a mailed package. The 52-year-old corrections officer in Oneida County was severely injured, and Governor Andrew Cuomo called the explosion horrific. Local, state, and federal agencies are investigating whether the attack was related to his job. Quote, there are a lot of unanswered questions, Oneida County Sheriff Robert Macchiol told reporters at a news conference. Quote, And we're confident that with all of us working together, we can figure out who did this. End quote. Read the full story in the Daily Freeman. Robert Gavin in the Albany Times Union reports that after a judge ruled that a jury could hear a racist remark from former sheriff Jack Mehar's successor, Patrick Russo, attorneys for former police officer and Rensselaer County agreed to settle a federal discrimination lawsuit. Lieutenant James Karam's case against the county would have started May 31st, but instead, lawyers are meeting with the judge in the case to go over the settlement. Karam, who is Lebanese, was reportedly told by Russo that he, quote, should shave his goatee or he would be put back on the terrorist watch list, end quote. Karam's lawsuit alleges that Russo had, quote, made repeated reference to Karam's ancestry during staff meetings, intentionally and or negligently subjecting plaintiff to ridicule, disparagement, degradation, and humiliation, end quote. Read the full story in the Albany Times Union. Matthew Hamilton in Capital Confidential reports that New York voters are telling pollsters they won't vote for incumbent legislators if Albany does not pass any ethics reform. In recent weeks, leaders of both houses of the legislature from both parties were sentenced to prison on corruption charges. The governor has made one proposal on one issue that is not going anywhere in this session. But otherwise, no votes have been taken on ethics or transparency issues. In a Siena College poll released May 31st, 53% of voters say they are less likely to reelect their lawmakers without new anti-corruption measures, though 32% say inaction wouldn't affect how they vote. And 48% say they are less likely to reelect their state lawmakers because the whole legislature is tainted with corruption. Read the full story in Capital Confidential. Matthew Hamilton reports in Capital Confidential that State Attorney General Eric Schneiderman on May 31st fired back after Donald Trump criticized him May 27th for a civil lawsuit against Trump University. Quote, this is a hugely important case, Schneiderman said. If you look at the facts of this case, this shows someone who is absolutely shameless in his willingness to lie to people to say whatever it took to induce them into his phony seminars, end quote. On May 27th, a California judge announced he will release internal Trump University documents relating to a case being heard in San Diego. Trump, while bullying the judge in the case from a campaign stage, also made fun of Schneiderman, calling him a, quote, lightweight. Quote, Obama meets with this dopey Eric Schneiderman, Trump said, suggesting that Schneiderman, quote, hates our governor, Andrew Cuomo, end quote, and wants to run for governor himself, quote, but I don't think that's going to happen. They go up to Syracuse. He meets with Obama and they file a lawsuit, end quote. Schneiderman's 2013 civil lawsuit against Trump alleges students paid fees they didn't receive services for. Schneiderman has said that, yes, he got a $10,000 contribution from a firm involved in the case around the same time that Trump gave him $12,500, and said the judge's decision in California May 27th was correct. Quote, you're not allowed to protect the trade secrets of a three-card Monte game, Schneiderman said. You're not allowed to protect the trade secrets of conducting fraud, which is all the playbooks are, end quote. Read the full story in Capital Confidential. This has been the WGXC News Update.
It's time for radio news about radio waves.
You're listening to radio news about radio waves. Headlines from the ether. Headlines.
The Frequency movie from the year 2000, Jim Caswell as John Sullivan, who, because of a giant solar flare, can speak with his dead father, Dennis Quaid, on his dad's ham radio, is coming back from the dead itself, returning as a CW television series this fall. Let's listen to the movie's trailer.
Once in a decade, massive solar storms invade our atmosphere, disrupting global communications.
John, it's your dad's old ham radio. Go over to the den, huh? Plug it in.
And causing unexplained phenomena.
W2QYV.
This is Frank Sullivan.
Hello?
What'd you say your name was?
Frank Sullivan.
Is this some kind of joke?
That will allow John Sullivan to talk to his father.
What do you say we tame this Bronco, huh? You and me, spared guts.
Who's been dead for 30 years.
But how could it be?
I don't know. But we gotta be talking off the mother-son spot of all time.
This time, it is a father, Riley Smith, speaking through radio from the dead to daughter, Peyton List. When radio was first invented at the turn of the 20th century, there was a common belief that one could speak to the dead through radio airwaves. This is Tom Rowe for Wavefarm Radio and WGXC. Next, Alana Midlock talks to Lauren Letelier and Chris Atkins from the Rojan Library.
I'm Lauren Letelier.
And I'm Chris Atkins.
And you guys are here from the Rojan Library, is that correct?
That's correct.
Can you tell me a little bit about the history of this branch of the library?
Sure. The Hillsdale Library was founded in 1924 and served the Ankrum and Copaic and Hillsdale communities until 2010, when the new library on Route 22 was built. And the old library now is the Hillsdale Town Hall.
Cool.
We just dedicated a new drive at the Rojan Library in honor of Flavia Bristol. She was a 19th century Hillsdale resident, a spinster, but remarkably an entrepreneur for her time. She left in her will $30,000, which was about $500,000 in those dollars, that year's dollars, to fund a permanent library for the town of Hillsdale.
Wow.
And that's how the Hillsdale Library started. And then it expanded its charter to serve Ankrum and Copaic as well. So now it serves all three communities.
Oh, do you know how she made her money originally?
Yes, matter of fact, we do. She, her brother was a very successful merchant in Troy and ran a dry goods business that apparently was widely known. And
George Bristol.
When he passed away, George left his share of the business to Flavia. And unbelievably, she decided that she could run it. And that was a really unusual decision for a woman to make in the late 1800s.
Huh, that's really interesting. And how did you guys get involved with the library?
Well, we're married, and we moved up here a little over a year ago, full time. We'd been living in New York City for 34 years. And we've always had a weekend house in Columbia County. But a few years back, we bought a place in Hillsdale because we wanted to be a bit closer to the city. I worked my way through college working at libraries, and I've always loved libraries. So when we got here, I suggested to Chris that we should start volunteering at the Rojan Library. And we were just astonished at the amount of programming that they have for adults and children and teenagers. It's really extraordinary what they do in the community.
And it's also a great place to meet people if you're new in town, as we were.
Right.
That's been great.
Mm, yeah. Are there any interesting events coming up in the next couple weeks?
Well, the one that's most interesting to me is our springtime fundraising gala, because somehow or another I got named to be chair of it. And it's a really fun event on June 18th at the Rojan Park, which is right across the Route 22 from the library. And there's music and a live auction, a silent auction, a raffle, and lots of fun stuff. So I hope anybody who hears this and can make it will come. You can get more information about it and even buy tickets at the rojanlibrary.org.
Something really fun we did recently that was special for the area was something called Community Read, which is where everybody in the community and the schools read the same books appropriate to age level. And the high school students and the adults read a book called The Guernsey Literary and Potato Peel Pie Society, which I had avoided reading in 2008 when it was published because I just hated the title, but I read it, and it was fascinating. It was all about the German occupation of the British Channel Islands during World War II, which I had no idea about. So we got the idea of contacting the head librarian at the Guernsey Library, the Prio Library, which is very historic over there, and she got in touch with two Guernsey residents who are older women now, but they were children during the occupation. They've both written books about it, and we did a Skype session with them back in March. That was extraordinary. We had over 45 people on our side participating, and there were the four of them actually on the other side of the pond, so to speak, and they just told the most amazing stories. It was really a wonderful thing. That's the kind of thing that the Rotan Library does.
That sounds really wonderful.
It was great.
And the other thing I'll mention is that we have a really neat program that helps people find work.
Right.
Oh.
Last year, we found people 11 good jobs.
I think it was
really?
14.
I think it was 14. You're right.
And that's throughout Columbia County? Are you targeting any specific sector or area?
No. We had one fellow who had a commercial driver's license, and we were able to connect him with a trucking company in the Midwest. They flew him out. They interviewed him. They hired him on the spot. And, so it can be wherever the work is.
One of the problems that people have is in our area, we don't have broadband, so a lot of people don't have internet at home. They come to the library and use our computers, and we've set up a system where we show them how to search for jobs online, because that's how you find jobs these days.
Yeah.
So we found jobs for everyone from a New York City school teacher to this long-distance truck driver to all kinds of different things.
Yeah, it sounds like the broadband question is a big one in state politics right now.
Yeah,
a lot of
yeah.
people are talking about it.
I really hope they move forward with it. It's a real lack.
Yeah, it's something not that long ago you didn't think of it as a social divider, but now it
totally.
Kind of seems like it really has become one, you know.
It is.
In terms
yeah.
of your ability to do stuff. And
well, and it's thanks to libraries like ours and the beautiful new library in Hudson that just opened that a lot of people use them to access wireless and access computers that they can't get at home.
Mm. Oh, what are your responsibilities at the library? It sounds like you're both running it, but
No, not even close.
Not. Well, we both had long careers in the public relations business, and so when I filled out my volunteer form, they asked if I had any skills that might be useful to them. And I thought, well, what the heck? I put down that I was a PR guy. And the next time I went into the library, one of the trustees came running up to me and said, "Congratulations, you're on the PR committee." And so, okay, that's fine. And then it turns out that because I'm on the PR committee, I'm automatically on the development committee. So I'm on a lot of committees, but actually it's really great work and we've done some really exciting stuff.
Same here. I do a lot of work with the development committee. A little bit with the programming committee, and we both work the front desk.
That's wonderful. Well, thanks, you guys. Thanks so much for coming in.
It's our pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
National headlines from Public News Service.
Welcome to the Public News Service Daily Newscast for Tuesday, May 31st, 2016. I'm Veronica Carter. Topping the news today, North Korea apparently tried to launch another missile this weekend but failed. The head of the Cincinnati Zoo standing by the decision to shoot and kill a gorilla, and one state's making an attempt to get healthy food to low-income residents. Here's what's happening today. Officials in South Korea say an attempted missile launch by North Korea failed. Media in South Korea reports the North tried to launch an intermediate-range missile from its east coast. Last month, North Korea tried several times to launch that same type of missile, but their attempts failed. Missile could theoretically reach Japan as well as U.S. territory of Guam. The head of the Cincinnati Zoo says it was the right decision to shoot and kill a rare gorilla after a little boy crawled into its enclosure this weekend. Thane Maynard says the child was at risk and his team made the right decision to shoot the 17-year-old gorilla. He said second-guessers don't understand you can't take any chances with a silverback. The U.S. is behind the curve on protecting the effectiveness of antibiotics, according to a new report. Eric Galatis has more.
A new report calls for banning or restricting the use of antibiotics in farm animals to curb the global spread of infections. Cameron Harsh with the Center for Food Safety explains continuously dosing animals creates stronger strains of bacteria, which makes antibiotics less effective at fighting infections in people. He says the report is a wake-up call for policymakers to reform common factory farming practices.
Producers can crowd animals, have higher stocking densities, and they're getting animals to grow faster on less feed. So in the long run, these have been misused as a tool to raise more meat and poultry products faster and more cheaply.
According to the report from the UK-based Review on Antimicrobial Resistance, some 700,000 people die each year worldwide from antibiotic-resistant infections, and that number could rise to 10 million per year by 2050. Industry groups say they're using antibiotics to keep animals healthy and claim the practice is necessary to keep costs down.
Experts on cell phone and brain tumor science so they're disappointed that some media outlets downplayed last week's government study that found a small but significant percentage of rats exposed to lifelong cell phone radiation developing cancerous or precancerous cells.
The $25 million study from the National Toxicology Program prompted a skeptical New York Times video saying overall brain tumor rates have not skyrocketed along with cell phone use. But Louis Slesson, editor of Microwave News, notes a major Times shareholder is a global wireless magnate. He also points to a USC report that said the same types of tumors rats developed in this study have increased in humans. Slesson says he's glad to see other influential groups changing their stance.
The American Cancer Society and Consumer Reports, which have been deeply skeptical for the last 15 years, have done a 180, and now they're saying that this is a paradigm shift that needs to be taken seriously and we need to do more.
Slesson recommends that people moderate their cell phone use, use earbuds, store cell phones away from their bodies, and limit children's access to wireless devices. CTIA, the Wireless Industry Association, has said it's reviewing the study and emphasized previous studies that showed no established health effects from radio frequency signals used in cell phones. I'm Suzanne Potter.
Nuclear Energy Watchdog Group has filed suit against the U.S. Department of Energy and a federal contractor for failing to clean up nuclear and toxic waste at the Los Alamos National Laboratory. Details from Mark Richardson.
The suit claims that waste stored at a lab site known as Area G hasn't been removed despite a 2005 consent order to do so. Jay Coughlin, executive director of Nuclear Watch New Mexico, says the DOE and its contractor, Los Alamos National Security, or LANS, has done little more than kick the can down the road.
We're alleging 12 counts, and it's pretty much indisputable, where they have missed compliance milestone deadlines. So that's what our lawsuit's about, to try and compel the lab to meet those deadlines, which have passed.
Coughlin says the New Mexico Environment Department is revising its 2005 consent order to extend the deadline beyond 2018 to clean up the dump site. But he says there's a loophole. For it to be enforceable, Congress would have to okay enough funds to complete the project. Today is the last day for public comment on the revisions.
Police in Vermont say a transgender man who was beaten at a homeless shelter died. Amos Bead died on Sunday. He suffered head injuries and facial fractures and broken ribs when he was attacked about a week ago at a homeless encampment in Burlington. Police say they are open to the possibility that it was a hate crime because of his transgender identity. Lots of flack for a Chinese company after a racial detergent TV commercial. The ad features a young Chinese woman popping detergent into a black man's mouth, then throwing him into the washing machine. The TV commercial suggested that the detergent is so strong that it would wash away the color of his skin. A Chinese company now apologizing. A big effort by farmers market vendors this year to help lower-income people afford fresh food.
Beginning tomorrow, vouchers for the Women, Infants, and Children, or WIC program, issued by the Iowa Department of Public Health, can be used to shop at farmers markets, as well as vouchers for lower-income seniors through the Iowa Department on Aging. Jennifer DeFoss with the Iowa Farmers Market Association says vendors have been getting ready to serve these new customers.
It's part of the Farmers Market Nutrition Program. And farmers across the state take classes to get certified to accept these different vouchers. Most markets in the state have farmers that are able to accept those vouchers.
WIC vouchers can be applied for at local WIC agencies around the state or through the Iowa Department of Health. Vouchers for seniors are issued through the area agencies on aging. Bob Kessler reporting.
You're up to date. I'm Veronica Carter for Public News Service. Member and listener supported and online at publicnewsservice.org.
National Weather Service predicts a low around 52 overnight. Wednesday should be mostly sunny with a high near 77. Partly cloudy Wednesday night with a low around 56. Thursday mostly sunny again with another high of 77. Thursday night there is a 50% chance of rain with a low around 58. Friday scattered showers are possible with a high near 72. You're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM.
Get a local event mentioned on All Together Now. Go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page. And copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
You're listening to radio news about radio waves. Headlines from the ether. Headlines.
The Amateur Radio Relay League reports that the ARRL reached an agreement with the Community Associations Institute, the National Association of Homeowners Associations, to amend the language of the Amateur Radio Parity Act, allowing H.R. 1301 to proceed in Congress this year. The act was meant to allow amateur radio enthusiasts living in deed-restricted communities to install an effective outdoor antenna. The homeowners lobby, though, does not want to lose the power to enforce deed restrictions across the country. Quote, "We express support for H.R. 1301, the Amateur Radio Parity Act, as proposed to be amended," unquote, a statement from the Homeowners Association said. Locally, a representative for Representative Chris Gibson told WGXC that the previous version of the bill has his support. This is Tom Rowe reporting for Wayfarm Radio and WGXC. There's lots going on this week in the WGXC community calendar. Go online to WGXC.org. Click on calendar for the community calendar and you can find out what's going on in town. You can even add your own event. Click on the add an event button at the top of the page to add an event. Soon folks like me will read your event on the radio and folks around the world will see it online at WGXC.org. On Wednesday, June 1st, their environmental activists meeting in Albany at the state capitol at 11 a.m. It's called New York Renews in Albany. June 1st at 11 a.m., a protest at the state capitol in Albany. Also Wednesday, June 1st, there are public meetings in Hudson. The Youth and Aging Committee meets at 6 p.m. and the Arts and Entertainment and Tourism Committee meets at 6:45 p.m., both at Hudson City Hall, 520 Warren Street.
Next, it's time for the Hudson Valley Song of the Day, a performance from a musician visiting the Capital Region or Hudson Valley, or who regularly plays around these parts.
Here's Beck's Ode to the Catskills as he's playing at the Mountain Jam on Hunter Mountain this weekend.
Come on, 7, come on now, 6, 5, 2, 3, 4. Oh, yeah, I like that. wrong with you, man? Get the other record.